Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Yeah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating. A donkey needs a pellet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.
So qualifiers this weekend, lads, after the big provincial finals last weekend, still two huge games in the qualifiers. It's the qualifier before the kind of All-Ireland quarterfinals, if you like. The big question here, Conal, is can any of these four teams win the All-Ireland? Like, when you look at it, you have Clare and Waterford going for four games in 4 weeks to reach the final, 5-5. And then you'll have Galway and Cork going for three games in 4 weeks, 4-5 to win the All-Ireland. Like, I mean, it is a tough, tough schedule, which just go, like, the prize for winning your provincial or even getting to the final really is huge.
Yeah, it is massive. But look, you're getting a second chance, so they'll take it. Can one of the teams win it? Yeah, of course they can. It's going to be very difficult. A lot will come into it, obviously, you know. Injuries is going to be a huge part of it, and the quality of your squad that you're going to have, because you're not going to be getting through these number of games with 16, 17 players. You're going to have to use nearly your whole squad. And who has the biggest squad and less injuries is really going to be keyed into it. But to answer quickly to your question is, yes, they probably can. One of those, Clare, Cork, Galway, Waterford, could go and win it. Now, look, Galway have had a bit of a break now, and Waterford they've had a bit of a break. They played Leash last game, which was a relatively tough game, but I'd say they're relatively fresh enough and ready to go. And they're delighted to be still in the championship, really.
I think that's it, Damien. Beggars can't be choosers. You'll just take whatever you can get. But I think from the Clare Waterford point of view, they're going, you know, five wins in 5 weeks to win an All-Ireland. Probably more difficult for them. Galway and Cork, a little bit, there's a chance there.
Yeah, well, Colm, I have a little bit of an issue with the draw and with the format in this scenario that, and I'm talking about my own county here, I don't think Galway or Cork should have got a bye. That's my own opinion. Whatever way the system or the fixtures have to be done, I don't think they should have got a bye. I think when you're coming out of the qualifiers, that it should be level play for everyone like this. So you take Clare, if Clare are to win in All-Ireland, right, I think they have to play something like nearly as a five Sundays in a row. Or 5 weekends in a row to try and win. Like, Clare are going into their fourth game now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Well, Galway are going into their second. Galway and Cork should be playing someone. I don't know whether it would be a Westmeath team or whoever. I don't care, right? There should have been a level playing field that everyone is on. Like, you're saying there, Galway got a rest. Like, and they did get a rest. Like this, where, for example, they're playing Waterford the weekend. And Waterford would have got some knocks against Leash, because that was actually a very difficult game. And Leash could have nearly toppled them. Right, but I just think it should have been a level playing field that everyone was playing the same amount of matches going through the qualifier system. And I think it was an unfair system where Cork again got a week as well off to manage injuries and all that. Now they're going to play Clare, who Clare played last week. I just find it unfair, and I think whatever system is going forward for next year, it shouldn't happen again. Everyone should be playing the same amount of games, level playing field, and let everyone be on at the same scratch level.
I think a lot of people in Clare were disappointed that they beat Waterford, Conall, in the Munster Championship, and then they lost.
Yeah.
And Galway and Cork beat no one.
Yeah.
And they got the boys where Clare didn't. I think that's what Damien...
Yeah, that's Damien's point. I suppose it's a good point. If everyone starts at the same time, and maybe it's time to look at that and take the boys out of it. And like, it's nearly a disadvantage sometimes to get the bye. Years ago, I would have been delighted to get straight into maybe a semi-final. But now you currently want the games to get the team settled and get going. And if you do get beaten... You can kind of regroup a little bit, but yeah, it nearly is a disadvantage now the way it is.
Yeah, maybe it is. Mayor Damien, I'm going to throw this one to you. This is the Galway enigma, and this is a piece from Martin Breheny in The Independent. Some incredible statistics in this, and how much Galway win at underage level, minor under 21, at club level. So I'm just going to read some out. I was blown away when I read it. This is since 1990. Only Kilkenny have won more under 21 titles. Galway have won as many All-Ireland senior club titles as Kilkenny, Tipperary, Cork, Limerick, Clare combined in the same period. It leaves them with 31 titles at club, inter-county minor, under 21, 8 ahead of Kilkenny, 22 ahead of Tipperary, 24 ahead of Cork and Clare, and 25 ahead of Limerick. He says those are astonishing figures, showing that of the 93 titles in those three categories, Galway took exactly one third. One third of them. Dwarfing every other county in the entire country. And then, in the same period, Galway have only won one senior All-Ireland. Kilkenny have won 13, Tipperary 5, Cork 4, Clare 3, 2 each for Limerick and Offaly. Isn't that a head-scratcher, Damien, when you see how much Galway are completely dominating those very important grades, minor under 21 and club, and yet it's one All-Ireland?
Yeah, it's a question that's been asked a lot of times, so it hasn't. It is, you know, but the answer to the question is, Colm, that we should have won some All-Irelands that we didn't win. Like, I always give the example of 2012. We should have won the All-Ireland, and we didn't. And I know it's a head-scratcher saying, well, how come we didn't? We didn't. We didn't win it, and we should have. 05 against Cork, I felt we had a team that time good enough to win an All-Ireland, and we didn't. We just didn't. Regarding the whole club scene like this, The teams that won club All-Ireland for Galway, we'll say, and I include our own teams, they were phenomenal club teams. And I do believe that we had club teams that no other counties had. Now, Ballyhale, with the exception in Kilkenny, they have a phenomenal club team. But club hurling in Galway was just unbelievably strong. And the second thing is, Colm, the club hurling in Galway was probably nearly taken too serious at a stage, where there's other counties that their club hurling isn't taken as serious. And even you could take some club players don't put in performances for the club because they don't really have that major interest in their clubs. Where in Galway, club is a huge thing. But the answer to the question is, the stats speak for themselves. We have won All-Ireland minors, we have won on under 21s, we have won club All-Ireland, and we haven't done it at senior level. So we haven't, which it prones a question why. So it is. But the other answer to the question is, Colm, that we weren't good enough to win All-Ireland. Like in the 2005 period, you just take with the years I was hurling. In 2005, we got to an All-Ireland hurling final, and we didn't get to another one until 2012. 7 years. And if you go through them teams for the 7 years, we weren't good enough. I'll be the first one to say, you go down through player per player, we were not good enough as a squad to win club or to win All-Ireland medals. And sometimes we have to take who was ever produced. So sometimes it's easy talk, but sometimes we were just beaten by better teams.
But just on that, Damien, like, say, for example, all the, like, Limerick are now dominating on the back of 221 All-Ireland winning teams in 15 and 17. Like, because you see huge players, great players coming out of those teams. What's coming out of the Galway underage teams? Like, is there no three or four real standout players? Or is just, you know, in general, a good team from 1 to 15?
Yeah, well, sometimes, Colm, to get these players to come through, a manager has to be given a 3 to 4 year plan, like, to go through. And sometimes that doesn't happen in Galway, that you're given a 3 or 4 year plan. Like, I remember this Limerick team, right? And I remember them going down playing Kilkenny in Nolan Park. And, like, they were at the start of this team. Like this, and, like, they were far from the finished article, but them lads needed to be given time and needed to be built out. Sometimes that doesn't happen in Galway. It just doesn't. And the truth is, I suppose, in the last 2 years, Galway do have a very good team at the moment, and they've underachieved. Like, Galway should have won the Leinster title last year. They didn't. And against Dublin, myself and Conan, and I was convinced that Galway would beat Dublin. You know, being straight up with you, and like, they just didn't turn up. They were extremely disappointing, and hats off to Dublin. They put in a phenomenal performance. But yeah, I suppose to answer the question again for you, Colm, is there's some of these players not given the time that's required. Like, you take the Galway under 21, or Galway under 20s played the other day, so they did, against Kilkenny. And I've seen a lot of top-class hurlers there. A lot of hurlers that I like the look of, the way they hurl. I like their sharpness, their application, everything. And I'd be hoping in time that these lads would be given a real chance. But when I say a real chance, you actually have to stick with these guys for 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe it's down to the fact that in recent years anyways, they're back winning four minor All-Irelands in a row, which is a record. That when the senior team is so strong, minors, and that, you know, they don't get that chance to come up into it.
Like, sometimes, like I see it in my own club, you have good minor teams and good under 16 teams, and if they don't make the breakthrough, because they're regarded as the top players in their team, and, you know, and they're treated that way, and then they can't make that jump into a big team, it's sometimes difficult for them, and then they're not developing on as a player as they should be, you know. And I think the point that Damien made about chopping and changing managers is a huge thing. Like, every manager nearly has their style, and they like certain players and they don't like other players, and they like the way certain players play. And a new man will come in and could freshen things up, get rid of three or four lads, and those three or four lads, you know, mightn't have developed yet, you know, and there might mean just getting used to things and getting used to that kind of level of hurling and level of training and level that it needs. And all of a sudden, they're discarded because we're going a different route. We want to play this way, or you're not fitting into my kind of system. And there are three or four players that could have flourished under the current manager if he was still there. So, look, it's probably a mixture of things with Galway. Like, but I think, geez, in Dublin, we take even one or two of those All-Irelands at the minors and try and hold on to all of the players, you know.
I'm even thinking of like Tyrone in football, who won they lost the minor All-Ireland to Laois, won the following year, and then followed up with two under-21 All-Irelands. And those two teams backboned three All-Irelands, you know. And
then who was the manager?
Well, I suppose Mickey Hart the whole time. He came up along with them. Yeah, maybe there is a point. Maybe there is a point on that. Come here, I'll get your thoughts on Dublin, Conal. Obviously, the COVID thing hit them hard. I saw Chris Crummie talking about it was a massive shock. The last thing you're expecting to hear when you woke up on the Saturday morning, you know, was that news. Lost Owen O'Donnell early. Like, they were really up against it.
Yeah, look, I suppose you could say everything that went wrong, like that could go wrong, really went wrong for them, especially on the start of the morning. I can only imagine the chaos with Matty and his management team when they found out, like, what the hell are they going to do? I would presume they didn't really want to start O'Donnell, I say, if they had a full kind of contingent of the squad. And then when this happened, they kind of were going, look, he might be okay, you know, he might just last that, you know, he might need to sprint, or he might, you know, obviously he wasn't 100%. No, and only probably wanted to start. Every player would want to try and give it a go.
That's normal. The problem is now he's probably missing for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, you'd like to hope that if I was a manager there, I'd say, listen, if you even think that's coming at you or you feel it, just pull it, because there's another day here. This is not about just all today. So I would hope. But I would hope that he'd be okay, that it was just maybe he just thought it was going to be at him again, and he just put his hand up. But like 2 or 3 minutes into it, it was very early to do that.
You could see him doing it. It was the very first ball he ran after TJ Reid. It was just off camera. You could kind of see him starting to limp.
Yeah, probably the first time he sprinted.
Yeah, first time.
I know myself, I'm hamstrings. You never really try it. You can get through fitness tests and you can bluff everyone, but it's when the ball breaks and your man is gone, you have to react, and you just do it, and then all of a sudden you realise I'm not ready.
What it actually is, it's the minute you stop thinking about it. That's the test. Yeah. And that's when you sprint in a match, when you're running after someone and the hamstring is the last thing in your mind. Whereas in the fitness tests, you're constantly thinking of it. So you're doing 90, 92, 93. But it's when you have to chase someone, all bets are off. And that's when it goes.
It's a different story altogether. Yeah, it is. Now, I never had much hamstring strength. I wasn't that fast, so it didn't make any difference. I would have got through in 80%. But look, very difficult for them, morning, coming into the game. I think they did very well considering all of that. I think the biggest loss was Hayes up front. Like, yes, Keane O'Callaghan was a loss in defence, but like, Andrew came in and did very well. I think defensively we're really kind of solid enough anyway. It's up front is the huge problem, and they just need more out of their forward line. They just didn't get enough, and they need that threat up there all the time. And look, we obviously had it previously with Rush. He was an option all the time in there to hit it long, and Hayes was nearly taking that role now, where he was able to run across the line and give him high ball in. So he was a massive loss, and more than any of them, really, I think.
Isn't it a problem with Dublin that it's a Patrick Horgan? You might say that's lazy analysis, but like, I mean, from 1 to 12, they look very, very solid. Where's the Patrick Horgan? you know, where's the Owen Kelly? Where's the Conor Whelan? That 15 and 13 doesn't seem to be there.
Oh, well, look.
I know these are special players.
They're special talents, yeah. Look, but I think if you look at the Dublin game, if you look at the so-called leaders that we would have, you know, Sutcliffe played very well, Crummy did very well, Rush was very good. You know, so those lads, Rush and Crummy were in the forwards doing really well, doing a lot of work. Okay, they're not racking up massive scores, but I just think that they did very well considering, right? But at the end of the day, they weren't good enough and we didn't win. So, like, that's the bottom line. I just think now they're probably in a situation where they can nearly take the shackles off and just go at this now. This is you know, shit or bust now for them. Like, so it's like, let's go at this full out. And I really believe that there's a massive performance still in this team. I think the players are there. Defensively, they're solid. And I think maybe with a few couple of changes up front, they can get a bit more from what they have at the minute. And I'm looking forward to who they get in the draw. I don't think anyone will really want to get them. I know it's like some teams will come in and say, oh, geez, I'd love to get that kind of side of draw that Dublin are on. That's exactly what Dublin want. They want that. They want that teams coming in with that bit of complacency. Maybe like Galway did it coming into the game. And that's when Dublin hit them really hard. And I'd say the lads are really looking forward to getting out with everyone that's available.
What's your take on Dublin? That day, Damien, like, I mean, Keane Boland got a point. He had a terrible wide as well. Keane Boland has a lot of qualities. Probably scoring isn't that high. Mark Shute never felt the weight of the ball, and Keane O'Sullivan never scored. 1 point from the full forward line.
Yeah, well, the first thing is you'd have to feel sorry for what happened to them with the whole COVID cases, and then O'Donnell getting injured. I really felt sorry for that guy, you know, at fullback, but he's actually a great player. So there's, I think their main man and their vocal point up front at 14. Ronan Hayes, we have a joke here actually, Colm, that I have a brother called Ronan Hayes, and in the family WhatsApp group, anytime Dublin are playing, we always go best luck to Ronan today. Now we're delighted you made the county, Ronan, you know, like this. But so I won't forget that name, and it was Ronan Hayes. But he's a big man, as Colin just said, he runs the lines. He's a fantastic strike of a ball, in particular off his left, which he scored a goal against Antrim, which was an absolute rocket. So, like, even to lose your full form, I felt sorry for Dublin in that regard. Their performance against Galway was admirable. I really mean that. I didn't think they would beat Galway. Hats off to them. They worked harder. They had a better attitude. They gave it absolutely everything. So they did, okay, Galway could have scored a couple of goals at the start, but they didn't. They didn't. And Galway and Dublin readjusted, and they ploughed on, and they won the match. And Matty Kinney deserves a lot of praise for it. Would anyone like to get Dublin? I would like to know Dublin. I think if they can get their house in order, I think Galway will beat Waterford the weekend. And if I'm doing the maths right, that means that Galway will play Tip, unless I'm wrong with my own maths like this, which means Dublin will get Clare or Cork. And I don't think Dublin would fear Clare or Cork in a what we call a 50-50 game, and they could get to an All-Ireland semi-final, and they have every chance of it. And Matty Kinney and the boys are doing a good job up there. It was just unfortunate that they lost their players and their full back like this. But if they're all back for the next day, I think they'll give lots of teams a right shot for it.
We'll move on, lads. What about, obviously, Wexford lost last weekend, and you know it's debatable whether Davy's going to stay on with them. And I was looking through his 5 years. Like, the record on paper doesn't look great. He's 8 wins in 21 championship games. Now, it has to be pointed out, his best year, the year they won the Leinster, they drew 3 of the group games and only won 1. So he won 1, drew 3 and lost 1. In their best ever year, you know, so that those numbers don't look as bad. One thing, he didn't beat any team from Munster. His record in the qualifiers was terrible. His record in Leinster was good. Beat Kilkenny twice. Were well able for Dublin in the time, you know, like, I mean, but his record against when they went into the qualifiers, lost to Waterford, lost to Clare twice, and lost to Tip in an Ireland semi-final. I'm not sure how to look back on it, to be honest with you. It was a success in the one at Leinster. Wexford hadn't won one, you know, since what, 97?
Yeah.
Do you think he should stay on with them, Conal? How do you look back on it?
I think they've... I think you look back and say it was a successful 5 years that he was there. I think he had his ups and downs, but I think he's brought Wexford pretty much, as they would say, up to the kind of top table. They weren't probably really competing, I think, before he came in, really. and I think he's developed the team. Okay, he seems to have a certain kind of a game plan, and that's what he goes with. But it's got Wexford so far, and they probably just need something really fresh to come in. You know, their players are really, really good, and they have top players. I would say, answering your question is, I would say the players are still happy with Davey. I'd say the public are relatively, in Wexford, are relatively happy, and they're glad he was there. Whether he'll stay on, I'd be very surprised if he does.
Yeah.
After his little speech afterwards, and 5 years is a long time with a squad doing the same kind of things over and over again. And I'd say it's something similar to when we had Daly with 5 years. Like, some lads want him to stay in because it's nice and consistent and everything, and you know what you're getting out of him. And some other lads want change. They just want something different, you know. And you might get the so-called players that aren't getting enough of a run, they might swing it and say, look, we need something different here, this isn't good enough anymore. And then you'll have the older lads maybe that are loyal to Davey to say, look, you know, he's brought us this far, you know, there's a chance if we get someone else in that we can go back even further, you know. So
yeah,
look, my own thoughts on it is, I think he's done a good job with them, and I probably think it just needs a fresh voice, and it's just to freshen that Wexford team up a little bit, and it could be the best thing that they ever need.
What's your take, Damien? When you look at it, they were a Lee Chin and Conor McDonald wide that they'd never hit ever again for making a Leinster final, and when we saw what happened in Dublin, they could be sitting Leinster champions waiting with Limerick for everyone to, you know, kill each other coming through the qualifiers.
I think myself, he's improved them, right? I think he's improved Wexford hurling. I think he's brought a standard to Wexford hurling. Liam Dunn was over them. I don't think they were ever going to win anything majorly under Liam Dunn. So when he came in, he brought an air of excitement to the whole county, and I think he has improved them. His game plan system, I think he's going to have to tweak that himself, right? I just can't understand it. I understand about getting men behind the ball and men around the ball and working through the lines. But I've seen Wexford too many times poking the ball into the full forward line or hitting long-range scores. And whether they get them or whether they don't get them, there's nobody inside in the full forward line, which I cannot understand. They played Galway in a Leinster final, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. Conor Cooney went riot. So, and I don't know how many times the ball went into the full forward line and the Galway goalkeeper come out and there wasn't anyone of 30, 40 yards of them. Against Clare the last day, I don't know how many times I watched the clips on it and there was no one inside in the full forward line. And then when he did decide to play Chin and McDonald inside in the full forward line, they caused a little bit of havoc with a route one ball to 14, which I have always say there's nothing wrong with. Regarding will he stay, I think he'll want to stay. I don't think there's a job out there for him, that's being honest. The only possibility of a job for him was Dublin. I think Matty Kinney might have bought another year from by beating Galway. So I do, and this whole COVID thing would have helped him in the Leinster final that he was unfortunate. He now has an opportunity possibly of playing Cork stroke Clare to get to an All-Ireland semi-final. If Matty Kinney doesn't stay in Dublin, I think it's been lined up for Eddie Brennan. So I do, that's why he's in the club scene in Dublin. These are just my own predictions. I think Davey Fitz would have been rumoured for the Dublin job if it came up, but now thereafter by Matty Kinney there. So I think myself that Davey will want to go back because I don't think there's a job out there and I don't think he's able to stay a year out of hurling and stick with the club scene because the club scene is way too slow. Basically, club scene is basically a September job. So it is. So I think Davey Fitz will want to go back again with Wexford. Some of the players will want him back. They'll be very loyal to him, as Conan said. He'll also try refreshing up his squad and getting different trainers and all this. But the long and short of this, column is, if he doesn't play two at least in the full forward line, his patterns of his game plans aren't working, and you need to have two at least in the full forward line, which is what Limerick do every year. Watch Limerick, they have men behind the ball, but there's always two men inside in the full forward line at all times near to goal.
Yeah, I'm not sure why Davey's always tipped to come to Dublin. There's no way he'd be getting to Dublin.
Well, I was wondering, I was going to say that to you there. I don't think Davey and Dublin will be a fit. Dublin like to keep them in a little bit more low-key than
yeah, look,
Davey,
I'm not sure if Manny's bought another year or not, but he's been there a while. But look, the case, I don't think Eddie Brennan's earmarked for the job in Dublin, that is for sure.
Well, he's heavily earmarked for the job, so he is down our way. And the rumour was that when he left the Leash job, Is it Cooley? He's over, is it?
Yep. He's over Cooley.
Yeah, so this is just the rumours, the rumour mill, as we call it, Jay Rumour Mill. And he's heavily he's heavily tipped, but the rumours was if Matty didn't do well this year, down our way, was that it was they were looking at Davy Fitz, and Davy Fitz was on his last year with Wexford. Just, we might as well talk it out, but as I said, then Eddie Brennan's has gone up there, and he's not gone up to Dublin hurling. We know he's going to see the club scene, but I don't think Davy is going to leave Wexford, because I don't think there's going to be too many teams that are going to want him, so he won't be able to stay out of the game.
Yeah, that's called putting 1 + 1 = 4, probably rumour.
It is.
I heard the whole thing with Eddie being lined up for the Dublin job, and that's just a logical step from Cooler to Dublin, you know. And I heard,
well, like,
what if
Cooler aren't successful? Like, well, that's still going then.
Yeah,
like,
Look, listen, that's just how people talk with these things.
Yeah.
Conal Keeney is meant to be going to be the trainer.
I can hardly train myself. Never mind train a team.
No, I said train.
I know, I wouldn't be doing that. No. Look, I'm sure. Look, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm sure John Costello will do the right job. He seems to always pick the right lads.
Yeah, we'll see how that pans out. But last one before we move on is Kyle Hayes, lads. How do you stop this man, right? Because you're a dual player, Conal, so you know how hard it is to stop an attacking halfback running at you, coming late onto the play. Is he playing? I was saying on Monday he's playing the position like a football wing back. He's carrying the ball. You never see that. You usually see a wing back in hurling when he gets a bit of space. Yeah. I'm taking a shot.
Yeah, like he's the player every team would want to have. Like, he's absolutely outstanding, and his performance the last day was unbelievable, and his goal just probably summed him all up as a player. Like, he's able to do everything, and he's so big and strong, and he has the pace to keep going. As he was going for that goal, you were just going, keep going, because the easy thing would have been just to pop it over the bar. But look, unbelievable player. How do you stop him? I don't really know, to be very honest. You try and double team him, you try and keep the ball away from his wing, but he seems to have a license that he can just, you know, if he feels that he wants to move into the forwards, he can go to the forwards. If he feels he wants to drift into the centre or drift to the other side, he seems to be able to do it and have the pace to get back and mark. Like, so if you're going out marking a fella like him, and let's say I'm wing forward and he's wing back, I'm nearly worried about him. I'm like,
oh yeah,
I can't let this lad go up here and have a few scores, because I'm gone if that's the case. And so you have to try and get on the ball, obviously, and turn him, but you turn him and he has the pace to catch you. Like, in it's very difficult to, but like, there's not many players out there like that.
And you can't hit him because he's a huge man.
Yeah, he'll probably get a bigger hit, a harder hit back. Yeah, like, yeah. They're well able for it. Like, it's like some of them Kilkenny players in their pomp. Like, they were lovely, stylish hurlers, and people were saying, oh, get stuck into them, and they might. Like, they're well able to dish it out. They do dish it out. And I'm sure Kyle Hayes is the same. They all dish it out, but like, you don't see all that because of other stuff that they do. So they don't get to that level without being able to mind themselves, you know?
Yeah. So as you noticed his finish, Damien, I didn't notice it until Paddy Stapleton told me on Monday. He kind of batted that with the hurley upside down. I didn't see it. The camera was a good bit away.
So the whole thing came from basically Keane Lynch caught the ball. And if you watch the piece of play, it was a complete training session. So Keane Lynch caught the ball and he offloaded immediately. It was like a little drill. And Kyle Hayes took off on a solo run. Now, if you watch it, right, I'm sure Liam Sheedy will not be happy with Brendan Maher. If you watch the clip, Brendan Maher came across to close him down and he sidestepped him.
Yeah.
Now Liam Sheedy would have been preferred if Brendan Maher fouled him or done something to him. But he just sidestepped him and left Brendan Maher the wrong direction, right? And then who was the call was running after him?
Dan McCormack.
McCormack, yeah.
Dan McCormack, right? And I know what this is like, right, in my latter years, that Kyle Hayes just took off and Dan McCormack was after him. And as Kyle Hayes was solo and Dan McCormack was running after him, and it was like a case, I know while it was going through his head, I'm not able to catch him. I'm not able to catch him. He's getting away from me. And the more the run is going, Dan McCormack's going, someone meet him, please. I can't catch him. Yeah. I can't catch him. But then if you watch it, Colin, he just jinks to the right and he done what we call a bat. And that has been practiced, I'm telling you, in the training sessions. That now, it wasn't a full-on bat. You'd often see Patrick Horgan scoring a goal like it or someone, right? But it was a full-on bat, and the power that he got behind the ball was unbelievable now, right? But and next thing, when he scored the goal, he runs straight back. So his fitness levels are phenomenal. He comes from a farming background. I sold him a car. He's actually a lovely fella. So he is, right? But he comes from a farming background, which has a different level of fitness, right? But Colin, you're saying, how do you mark this guy? Like this, my opinion is, you put a smaller guy on him, right? I had an experience. I marked Sean Ogg in the 2010 league final, so I did. And I remember John McIntyre coming up to me and telling me that I was going to mark Sean Ogg. And like, I was here, John, I'm 5'7", 5'8". He's 6'3" or 6'4". Like, huh? And I had to get into my head, how am I going to mark him? If I was someone saying, how would you mark Kyle Hayes? I'd run him all over the park. I'd run him all over the six forwards position, and I'd keep him moving. And I'd have to do a job with him not getting the ball, but I'd run him all over the park. But also, just to say, you're saying he's allowed to run up the field into different positions. Credit has to be given to the likes of Donovan that's at midfield, and in particular in the second half, he's kept in the half backline situation in around that area, which allowed the Kyle Hayes to plough forward. And when he did, he rotates into number seven position to fill the area. So he does, and that's all training. It's all tactics. It's all a game plan like this. But the way I'd mark Kyle Hayes is I'd run him all over the six forwards and I'd keep him moving.
Yeah. Maybe he went with the bat because he thought Dan McCormack was closer to him and he didn't realise that Dan had probably, you know, in his own mind gone, I'm not catching him halfway there. Before we move into the matches, lad, Shane O'Donnell, Jesus, this lad's gone. He's gone for the year, Damien. What's the talk? Brian Lohan.
The talk in Clare is that no one knows why he's not playing. It's all to do with this concussion.
It's a concussion, yeah.
Thing, obviously. Which, like, if you do talk hurling in the showroom here, it's like, if his name does come up, the thing is, like, where is he? Like, or, you know, it's... So whether he got an awful bad concussion...
He did, Damien.
So it's...
Brian Lohan...
But
Brian
it's looking that way. It's looking like his season is over, yeah.
Yeah, his season's over, apparently. Brian Lohan said he's making progress, so we're just hopeful that he'll be okay, regardless of hurling. Just in his own life that he'd be okay. Jesus, he must have taken an awful hit in training before that Kilkenny game. There's no doubt. Because I remember...
I got concussed, Colm. I got concussed one time myself. Just it only ever happened to me once, right? And I ran into Andy Smith, a good friend of mine. We were playing Clare in a qualifier up in Salt Hill, right? And I didn't think I was concussed. Obviously, this, right? But I will never forget the next morning, the headache that I had. I'll just never forget the next morning, the headache that we were doing a recovery session and I just went straight to training and went straight over to Dr. Dan. So I did. And I'll just never forget. So I can only imagine if he got it, what it would be like. I was grand, like, the following day or the 2 days later. But, geez, like, to get a concussion like that, it must be... And to have blackouts and it must be very, very serious.
Yeah, and come here now, just as that it's crossed my mind, how is it you've sold Kyle Hayes a car but you give Tony Kelly one for free?
No, number one, it's all to do with your clear
backtrack quick.
Yeah,
backtrack.
Tony was from Clare, so it's all to do with Clare. So it's up to someone in Limerick if you want to give I have no doubt about it, Colm, that If Kyle stays doing what he's doing, he'll be going around with a sponsored car. So maybe it's one of the Limerick dealers need to sort that out. But
Come here, when did you sell him the car? Because I'd imagine Kyle Hayes, the profile he's at now, is surely driving around a sponsored car.
I sold him. I sold him 2 years ago, and I told him that story as well, the one that I told you, that the year Galway were in the All-Ireland, I was sitting beside this lad from Limerick, and I told your man that Kyle Hayes was my cousin. Do you remember I told you that story?
Yeah.
Kyle scored 4 points that I was from play that day. And your man turned around to me and he goes, Jesus, like, your man is doing the business today. Like, you know, so what's called it? But yeah, he came up. Yeah, I sold him a car. I got a photograph with him because I told him that story about cousins. So I think he put it up on his Instagram page, delighted to buy a car for his cousin. It was like big and small there, 5'7" versus 6'4" or whatever. But no, he's... And that time, Colm, I think he was only like 19 and he was a huge man. Yeah. So he's after becoming a bigger man. And like, it's not often, Colm, that you get a lad as big and as mobile as that, that can get around the park with so much skill levels. So it is. But no, he's a brilliant hurler. And just to say as well about that Munster final, it was the best performance I ever seen from a hurling team that won in the second half in the first 20 minutes. The best I ever seen. I don't remember many Tipperary players winning 50-50 balls. The Limerick players won nearly every ball. Like, and you go through it, Pádraig Maher, you go Brendan Maher, you go Jason Ford, Noel McGrath, Bubble, Shamie Canlan, Barrett Cornerback. They didn't win a ball in 20 minutes. They scored 1 point. It was the best performance I've seen from a team in the first 20 minutes of the second half that I've ever seen. They were phenomenal.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those performances where you're just going, holy shit, what's happening?
Like, there were 10 points down 10 points down, Tip scored 1 point up to that water break, and Limerick went 2 points up. So, like, basically, it's like a 12-point turnaround. Unbelievable.
You'd wonder, I was watching it, and, like, it was unbelievable performance by Tipperary in the first half, and you've seen them going in at half-time, Sheedy, with, you know, clapping his hands, and, you know, it looked like that.
Was there a need for that? Or was that, was this hindsight going, you know?
It's all for the television.
Sheedy, was there a need? Or, like, I could imagine Limerick players walking in watching Sheedy celebrating with his team. Or, like, I mean, I'm not saying this after the fact. I remember watching it going, that's a bit unusual.
Yeah, no, it was unusual. And I wonder, in the dressing room, were the Tipperary saying, we're showing these lads now, you know, we're the hurlers and we are dominating Munster. Like, let's go out and destroy them now in the second half. And look, nearly kind of complacent a little bit. Well, in the other side of the dressing room, probably Limerick, we're nice and composed and calm. And like, we didn't even really hurl there now. Let's get a bit more physical. And you've seen what they were doing. They think they have this one.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's go and see how good they really are now. And look what happened. The game is over after, whatever, 20 minutes into the second half.
Yeah. I'm not sure, John Kiley.
The big change for the second half, just the difference between the first half and the second half, what changed with Limerick? The big change was that their two midfielders set in the half-back line. They literally had a five-man half-back line. And that was the big change. Jason Ford had 6 points from play scored in the first half. He had the room. He had all the room of Cork, yeah. Right? As in, when he got the ball, he was 15, 20 yards. That stopped. Once they tightened up that area, they were able. And then it's like getting English went off injured, right? Your man come on at full back, and then come on as well, the corner forward.
Galan and Dan Morrissey.
Dan Morrissey and Galan. And like it was a big chance to take not playing Galan, because he's their free taker. Like, even if Galan isn't motoring, he's a 9 out of 10 free taker, not 10 out of 10. It's a big chance not to play your free taker, but that was a big difference for me. Limerick played five across their half back line literally in the second half, and they tightened the whole thing up and they built from there.
I actually felt sorry for Mulcahy coming off, because the whole thing nearly, when Galan came on, the whole thing changed. The ball was going in really nicely into the corners, and like Mulcahy wasn't getting very much anything. And then it's the same old story. If things aren't going well, we'll take off the corner forward there and we'll sort it out then. And nearly that's what happened.
Yeah.
But
he gives them more presence in there than Mulcahy, though. Cause like,
yeah, he's more of a threat, of a goal threat. Yeah, he is.
Or
yeah.
Like, even a bit longer ball, maybe, you know. He can win his own ball.
But what I love watching...
He's a great hurler, Glenn. And even I can't get over the size of him. Do you remember the time he pulled across Barrett? That's when I know it's the size of him, the physique of him. He went in for a throw-in, so he did with Brendan Marr. He's a way bigger man. Like, Brendan Marr's not a small man. He's a huge man for a corner forward.
No, he is. I've interviewed Galan. He's a huge man. He's absolutely huge. Right, are we view Conal? I'll let you have the last word here, and I'm moving on to these matches.
One point it, like,
this is a preview show, not a review show.
the best thing about this Limerick team is Keane Lynch's touch. It is just unbelievable. Like, he never seems to miss touches. Every time he's in any kind of ruck, he is always getting the ball coming out, and he takes some serious abuse and never does it, and just gets on with the game. And I just love a player like that. And I just watching him all the time, even if the ball is up to the end, I just love watching him, because his movement and his skill is. I haven't seen anyone like it. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and we were saying on Monday, he showed another side to him, which was a kind of a warrior battling kind of side. He took a lot of punishment
off Dan
McCormack and kept coming back. Right, listen, we'll leave it there. We'll have to stop at some stage, lads. We'll come back and we'll preview the two games at the weekend. The three games at the weekend. All right, lads, so the first big one of the weekend is Waterford-Galway. It's in Semple Stadium at 2 o'clock. It's on Sky. Sky got the doubleheader on this one, so two good ones to get. I'll start with you, Damien. Like, what did Galway have to do here? Like, I mean, do they say this was a freak result, we didn't perform on the day, our defence was solid, 118, you'd take that any day of the week playing in a championship match against any team, our forwards didn't work on the day, we have a brilliant forward line. Like, do they need to change things, or do they need to trust that this was a very, very bad day at the office, which can happen teams?
No, well, you said what to go, we need to do. The first thing they need to do is win the match. That's the first thing, and I mean that, because they definitely took the game for granted against Dublin. So they did, and Dublin deserved a win. I want to go on record saying that, and their game plan and their work rate, their application and their attitude Dublin showed that day was phenomenal, and it was brilliant, and that's why they won. So I think Galway need to go back to a little bit of basics in winning the dirty ball. They need to start trusting each other. They need to work back for each other and everything. Regarding the forward line, like I think I was on the show here one day and I read out the scores they've got over the last couple of league games,
yeah,
which was unbelievable, and they didn't do it the last day. So they'd want to just up their performance and work rate. This is what they'll all start talking about. I don't think he's going to mix it up, you know, as in chain, toss the whole team up and down like this, you know, but there's certain players that if they're not going well, I do find they do start operating, you know, changing them into different positions. I think there's certain, there's lads in the line. I'd like to see Jason Flynn getting more of a run on this Galway team. He's around a long time. I think he's a very, very good hurler. He's there since I was there, since 2013. And he still has nailed down his position. You know, there's a lot of chopping and changing. Niall Brooks and other lads on and off like this. So I think they just need to go back to working hard and getting it, playing it through the lines. And also just hitting it directly into the full forward line. Because they have the players inside. You have Conor Whelan, you have Kulcannon inside. These lads want the fast ball, and they're able to get scores like this. I wouldn't mind seeing Joe, myself personally, playing more at the edge of the square. I like to have a vocal player at the edge of the square and have a target man like that. But I don't think they're going to change things too much. I think there'll be a whole work about their Tom will be work rate and getting it right on the day.
Well, maybe that'll be it, Conlon. When you see when Limerick were able to fix it at half time against Tipperary, they deserve a lot of credit from that, because often when you're you know, off it, it's hard to get back on it. And Galway couldn't correct it at half time, for example, and they were clearly off it against Dublin. And again, Tip and Dublin get credit for that, but at the same time, they were off it.
Yeah.
And Galway, being one of the top two or three teams that we all thought, couldn't correct that. So that's a problem.
Yeah, it's probably a little worry, I suppose, to how easy the Galway forwards were contained, maybe, you know, but maybe that's down to Dublin tactics and they did very well. But I think he's probably, Damien's right, the management will just go back and say, we need to up the work rate, get the intensity going a lot earlier and take the easy scores if they're on. Now, obviously, I think against Dublin, they had four or five chances for goals and they didn't take them. If they got maybe two or three of them, it would have been maybe a different story, but they didn't get them, So I think the best thing is not to change everything and chop and change positional and bring in different lads and everything and hope that works, because
you're Galway's, starting from scratch.
Yeah, Galway's had a relatively okay league like coming into it, and they've been getting massive scores. Like, so okay, let's just park that Dublin game and go back at it and work rate at intensity, and that's where we go, and let's take the easy scores and work ourselves into the game and let the game kind of flow a little bit. And I see you, Damien's point of having Joe inside. It's a good option to have all the time. Is he more beneficial in there than he would be out around the middle? I'm not sure, like, but yeah, get the ball in as quickly as possible to Kilcannon and to Whelan and let them do their stuff, and everyone else working really hard. And if anyone's not working, they're getting called ashore fairly quickly. And I suppose that's the line I would take with that.
Yeah, Davy Burke came on for Toohey after 34 minutes against Dublin, and Nyland came on for Loftus in midfield. I imagine Nyland went into the forwards, David Burke then went into midfield instead of Loftus. Do you think those two will start the next day, Damien?
Yeah, I'd say there's a huge possibility, yeah. Like, David Burke's a right good player. Like, the big disadvantage with David Burke at the minute is they're looking at his age, and they're saying that he will see out a game. So, basically, Galway are going to ask themselves there, are they going to start with David Burke and maybe take him off after 45 minutes, or are they going to bring him on? Personally, I always like to be starting like this, and I always hate this, you know, premeditated changes like this. Like, if David Burke was playing like this and he was playing midfield, and after 45 minutes, he's flying it, or he's still going well. Like, there's no need then to take him off like this. And sometimes I do think, and I'd love to know the answer to this question, right? And it's maybe a question, Woolly, that you can ask some of the managers. How many players are taken off because of this box thing that's on the back of their shoulder blades? You know, that's telling you your heart rate and you're maxed out. Do you know that? Do you know the box?
The GPS, yeah.
It tells you how much. GPS. I'd just love to know how many players are taken off that they're telling you your heart rate is is too high and he's maxed out, he can't go any further. Like, if you were the top, like, you take Rory O'Connor, right? Last year, he was taken off, so he was, and a lesser player was brought on, right? So for Wexford. Like, if they put him in corner forward for 5 minutes and let him get his heart rate back down, or let him, you know, just would say, get his breath back. Could you brought him back out again and he'd have come into it more, back into the game more. But yeah, Loftus more than likely will start. So David Burke, I think, will start as well. I would like to see Jason Flynn. I'm a fan of him, so I do. I think he's a good hurler. Maybe he lacks a little bit of confidence at time, but I like to see him starting as well for Galway. I don't really know. Like, it's a bit like Conan said there a minute ago, is it an advantage getting a break or was it a disadvantage? I think for Galway it was probably an advantage. They should go into this game a little bit fresher so they didn't Waterford, because I guarantee you Waterford will tell you that they earned every bit of that game against Laois the last day, and I think some of them lads will be fairly tired.
Just quickly on the GPS thing, that kind of bothers me. I think it was Colin Boyle used to get taken off regularly for Mayo, and he seems to be playing really well. My thoughts on it, if you're playing well and your GPS stats are on the wane, you'll stay on until you start making mistakes. But if you've gone out of the game and then you see that the GPS stats have dropped, well, then, you would add up, maybe that's the reason, and then you might speed up bringing them off.
I think it depends.
Colin, we played a league match one time, or a challenge match one time. It was the first time I ever put on one of these GPS, and I used to call it the male bra, right? And what to call it, I knew well what was going on here. So I put it on, but I didn't plug it in. That's the secret of any of the boys have any worry about. Put it on, but don't plug it in.
And were they trying to
see it's a fault?
Were they trying to track you as you were getting a bit older, trying to tell you you weren't covering?
They were trying to track everyone and see what these were like, you know, and all that. But as I said, you were putting on the male brand. I didn't bother plugging mine in that.
What do you think, Colin?
I think there is a role in this, in the kind of modern area, for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think a manager needs to trust what he's seeing.
Exactly, that's my point.
And I think these lads that come in with these the GPSs and all these stats and everything have too much of a say. And any of the teams that have been involved in the last, let's say, 5 years, their roles are they're getting, in my opinion, way above their station. They're getting involved in stuff they shouldn't have, and coming down at half time and coming in the manager's ear saying, oh, his speed runs are less, or he's not covering the same ground as he used to, or last, you know, he's dipping. Like, give the man a break. Like, you could be dipping, and I'll put it like this: you could be in the game and score 1-6 and mightn't run a whole pile.
Yeah.
And you could be in the game and running around like absolutely 90, like a headless chicken, just to get. And this does happen. You're running around to keep your GPS up, because you don't want to be the one to say on the Tuesday when it's up on the board, oh, you only covered like 6K. What's the story there?
Yeah.
You know, you're not able to do it anymore. You're not.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I didn't need to run 6, 9, or 10K, did I? Like, you can't. There's no arguing with these lads, because the manager just see it's black or white, and they say, well, look, in the last couple of games, you only ran, you know, I'm not sure if you can actually play that position around that middle. You know, we might need to put you in, or when we get to 50 minutes, I think it's time to take you off. Well, I could have just banged in like 2 or 3 goals or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, okay, that's an extreme 2 or 3
or
goals.
If one of your leaders, for example, say there is a point in the second half where you are a bit tired and you could make 2 runs and you don't, because you say in the last 10 minutes I'll be needed that, and then one of the leaders might get 2 points late in the game.
Yeah, that's my point, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that he would be whipped off if you were to believe the stat he hasn't made 2, you know, or a run there.
What are you bringing on? You're bringing on, let's say, a hare that's going to run everywhere for the sake of these stats. Like, as a manager, you need to know, okay, let's say Damien Hayes, he's inside there now. He's a goal threat. Like, he might be absolutely knackered, but if the ball comes in, I know he's going to do it. Whether I bring in a young lad or a fresh lad, and he's going to be running everywhere, and the stats are going to be through the roof, but yet he can't catch the ball. He drops the ball or he mishits it. So your manager needs to look. Does Brian Cody look at these stats that much? I love going back to him. I would say very, very little. He probably knows about them, and he might use it to confirm I'm taking him off because he's not playing well. And you know what? Your stats actually don't agree with me because
of
that.
Should those lads speak when spoken to? As in, if the manager radios up and says
absolutely,
right, Damien Hayes, Woolley or Connell, it doesn't look like he's going that well. Would you say, here, what's his stats like, and then find out to confirm what you think?
Yeah, but you need a strong manager. Like, if the manager's in any way kind of weak and he likes to delegate and let everyone have their opinion, like, I've seen it where these lads are given these presentations beforehand and saying your tackle count is this, that and the other, and like, these lads aren't even selectors or nothing, they have more of a say than anyone. It boils me up to, and these lads never played. All they do is go on the computer and they let these stats, and they might compare it to a Tipperary team or Kilkenny team or a professional outfit. Like, you need to have, you need to look, if I was ever the manager, I'd listen to these lads, but I'll take it and I'll disregard it if needs be. If it's useful, I'll use it. If not, I'm not going to be looking for it in the middle of a game, and I'm not going to be looking for it at halftime. If you're looking at a game, you know who's not playing well and you know why he's not playing well. You don't need a stat lad to come in and tell you, oh, his high speed runs are down now in this last 10 minutes. I don't care. Like, I'm actually the manager here. I'll sort this out. Like, you don't need this stuff at that time.
Yeah. Or are they down because there's no ball coming in?
Well, yeah.
You know, is that a midfield problem? Well, now we're back to the corner forward getting taken off. Poor Graham Mulcahy. It's interesting. We'll move on from that there. What about Waterford, lads? I suppose, in a way, Damien, Waterford are going to have a similar setup to Dublin. They're going to drop Irla Daly back, kind of covering the full forward line. They'll have someone else kind of standing into centre back. And Galway didn't manage that too well against Dublin.
Yeah, I know. Look at it. Liam Cahill, I think this week they'll be doing a lot of video analysis, and they'll be looking at stats and all that sort of thing. They'll do very little, just a little bit of sharpening up, because that game would have taken a lot out of them. Because in fairness to Leash and to Cheddar, I think they gave it absolutely everything, to be fair, you know. And Cheddar's a fierce hurling man. He takes fierce pride, like, you know. So they wouldn't have been simple. But the only fear I'd have for Waterford the next day, this is just a fear, is that they'll run out of steam, because that game will have taken a lot out of them. Like this, but I don't think they're going to change their tactics an awful amount. They'll do a lot of hurling ball. Your man De Bourke is an awful lot. Jeez, he's an awful lot. So he's right. But I think Galway should be good enough to beat them. Well, they should be. And if they're not, they deserve to be out of the championship. I'll be the first one to say it. But I actually expect this to be a very, very good game. There'll be a lot of running. Waterford bring an awful lot of running to the game, so they do. They pick off lovely scores, so they do. I think they'll want to make certain they'll get their matchups right, so they do. But I think Waterford will be hugely motivated for this game. I actually expect it to be a really good game between Waterford and Galway, and then Galway need to go with the blocks early, try to put confidence back into their game. But I think both teams will kind of know their setups. Waterford know theirs, but I expect it to be a right good game of hurling.
Yeah, I think Waterford definitely have forwards that can hurt them. Like, Stephen Bennett can pull Doughty Burke everywhere from number 11, and Doughty Burke probably won't want to go into those areas. And the same with his brother Shane at 14. He'll pull McInerney all over the place, and Desi Hutchison. And like Liam Cahill said, he said, we're looking for movement and energy and tracking and running, and I'm sweating there in the sideline. He was talking about the energy levels weren't there. They'll be there. I don't think Galway will enjoy playing against Waterford. I think it'll be a pretty close game.
No, I think it will be. I think the Leash game was interesting. Maybe if I'm wrong, I think Waterford were trying players in different positions, were they not? Were they trying, like, Moran was wing forward?
Yeah, he went back,
you know,
wing forward.
And Austin was up full forward.
I think he's picked 14. I think he might have played in midfield. Listen, it's impossible to say off the Sunday game highlights. The show does nothing really.
Yeah. But look. I don't think
that's
either team.
Sure. The Sunday game is getting worse and worse. They're showing less and less of the matches.
Yeah. It is difficult. You're only getting a quick summer. You're only getting the kind of the good scores, and then that's it. It's very hard to understand exactly what's happening. But look, I don't think either team will fear each other coming into this. I think the last day after, with Conor Prunty back for Waterford is a huge plus, and I think Jamie Barron got a couple of minutes as well, so that's a huge plus as well. Whether they have enough now for this big game, it's hard to know, but it'll certainly be. I'd say I think this will be the game of the weekend.
Yeah, I think so. You're going for Galway, Damien. Who are you going for, Conor?
I'm sticking with Waterford.
You'll stick with Waterford, yeah. I'll say an extra time win for Waterford, right? We'll just throw it out.
And just to say, if Jamie Barron is back for Waterford, as in starting, and he's an unsung hero on that team, he's a phenomenal hurler. So if Waterford have him from the start and he's motoring, I still think Galway will win, but he's a key player for Waterford.
Yeah, he's the engine for them. So Clare Cork, this is in the Gaelic grounds, like I said, on Sky as well, at 4:30. Like, I mean, there's no doubt here, Conal, that Clare are the battle-hardened championship team at this stage. Like, they feel like they've played so much. They've only played three games. Cork have played one. Like, Clare have to be in a better place coming into this game than Cork?
Oh, definitely. Like, I think in a squad, when you're winning, there's no better feeling. And I know they're playing game after game, but that doesn't really bother a squad. I think if you're not getting any major injuries, you're not really training during the week. You're just recovering and having a chat about what's coming the next week. So I think that's great. The more games you get, the better. And look, it's great. All we seem to do is put on the telly now, and Clare always seem to be playing. I think that there's nice hype around it. And that they're getting with this Brian Lowen. Like, Brian Lowen, I think, is not getting the praise he deserves for his tactical awareness and his, like, if this was Davey or if this was Sheedy, you know, it'd be all over the place saying, "Oh, look, this lad's unbelievable. Like, he's a magician." But Brian Lowen's just going about his business, nice and quietly, and he's getting the results. And fair play to him. And what will he do this weekend with Tony Kelly? You know, who knows? And it's exciting to know what's going to happen. But they seem to be the team of the year so far. And this weekend, the only thing I'd say about the Clare thing, it was impressive that Conlon was relatively quiet and Tony Kelly was relatively quiet, and other lads just popped up and they got the result that they needed relatively comfortably. So that's all good for Clare.
Tony Kelly was followed by Rec, wasn't he? And Matthew Hanlon, I think, picked up Shanahar because he wasn't going to be. I think Tony Kelly will go back into full forward line this weekend because Damien Cahillan will probably pick up Shanahar and then Tony be on one of the two corner forwards who aren't that big. And I think Tony could probably go to town in one of the two of them, Damien.
Yeah, I would expect them. I would expect Tony to line out in the full forward line. So I think they'll see when they go through their video analysis that they're getting more out of Tony inside in the full forward line than they would. But they'll also allow him after time to rotate, going in and out. Whatever, Shanahar will be full forward because he's an anchor there. So he causes problems. Even if he's not scoring, he's causing problems with breaks. So this, I think Clare will. I just have this feeling they'll start David McInerney the next day. I do at wing back. So I do Rory Hayes at cornerback. He's becoming one of my favourite hurlers at the moment. So he's absolutely loved the way he hurls. I love the way he rides the ball and he just goes direct one straight out the middle. So he's soaring with the ball. He'll throw the ball over the bar. I want to let you know as well, he's no relation of mine, but he's a right good surname, right?
Here, come here. Will he pick up Patrick Horgan? Would he be suited to Horgan? Like, Horgan wouldn't like to follow him when he comes tearing out with it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I expect him, he'll be given a man-marking role, but no better man, as I said. I just love the way he hurls. It's a no nonsense. So it is, and he'll go up the field, and when he gets the ball, he'll turn his man, and he goes direct straight down through the middle. He'll give a hand pass or whatever. As you all know, I'm fierce friendly with Sean Tracy, who's the trainer of the Clare team. Like this, he said they're one of the most honest bunch of players he's ever trained. That was a direct quote from him. Like this, he says they're so honest. What you see is what you get. And the likes of, you're saying them. Brian Lowen. Like, in fairness to Brian Lowen, didn't he have a great championship last year? Even though we all spoke about Tony Kelly, but like, he got the best out of him and he got them as far as he could. And this year he's doing the same thing. And as Conan said there, if it was Davey or Liam Sheedy, there'd be a lot more talk about him. But the whole thing is, I find Lowen's a little bit more private. He's not as much into the media hype like this. But I have to say, I do love him on the sideline. He's like a lad that's just going to explode, even when you're interviewing him. If, you know, he was asked the last day, like, over the controversy over, you know, the game previous, how have you reacted? And he just goes, we just moved on. It's just a lot. It's like a lad is waiting to explode. So, Clare and Cork will be another great game. So it will, and I think Clare are on a run. So they are, and form speaks value of everything.
Well, that's it. They'll both kind of play a little bit similarly. Coleman will try to drop off as a centre-back and Conlon will try to drop off, and they'll probably play two men inside on either side. Yeah. A lot of teams playing similar tactically. The one thing for Clare, like, I mean, I agree. I think what Lowen has done, as he's improved so many of those players, he's done a very underrated job. Cork have a bit too much pace for them. Is where Clare haven't beaten Cork since the All-Ireland Final 2013.
Yeah, look, the only thing with Cork is probably their consistency is probably going against them. Getting a couple of performances back to back. The other thing is, and I think in the last game for Cork, Patrick Horgan didn't score from play.
No, he had a nightmare. When you saw what Limerick did to Tip, does that Cork performance, other than those two goals just before halftime, they were well able for Limerick that day?
Ah, look, it's hard to read into it. Like, you know, you could say that. Like, but. I think there is a lot in Cork's favour. Like we went on here before about their puck outs. Their puck outs relatively nearly worked for a lot of the game against Limerick. And there's a lot, their underage is coming really good in Cork again. So Cork, I'd say, are kind of bubbling underneath the surface. They're looking forward to this game and hoping to hit them hard and hoping to run Clare and hoping that Clare won't be able to contain their pace, obviously. But I wouldn't be too sure. I don't think of it. Obviously, this is Clare's fourth game and Cork's second. I wouldn't be too sure that you'd be able to run the legs off these Clare lads. You know, you can't underestimate championship games and wins. That just gives you that extra bit of confidence going into these, and it galvanises the squad. And everything seems to work really well. And I think Clare have a really good chance against Cork in the weekend, and I would tip them to beat them.
Right, okay. One problem for Clare would be Darragh Fitzgibbon, Damien. Like, when he takes off, I don't see Colm Galvin or Malone having the legs for him. Like, I mean, how do you plan for Fitzgibbon? Who, you'd almost say, how do you plan for Kyle Hayes as a wing-back? Darragh Fitzgibbon's doing that just from a little bit further up the field. And, you know, would you put Dermot Ryan on him from, as a, you know, wing-back?
It's possible, but it will be spoken about. So if he takes off, Brian Lohan and the management team will speak that you have to stick to him. You have to make these runs. You have to track him. It's as simple as that. And if he's making the runs around the Cork players, like, the one thing they'll bet you, they'll say you're accountable for your own man, and you have to mark him and you have to do a job. It's as simple as that. Regarding the Cork game plan, I have to say sometimes it absolutely frustrates the living lights out of me. So does that. Like, I think there's always two or three passes too many, you know. And I you know, for Jermaine O'Sullivan that's involved in that setup, I often do love to know, deep down, what does he actually think? Would he love it if the boys just hit the ball straight into the full forward line to Cadigan, to Horgan and all these boys, where these boys could actually get onto ball? And I just think there's way too many passes. The fullback gets the ball, he has to hand pass it to cornerback. The cornerback solos, he hand passes to wingback. The wingback is the centre-back. Centre-back hits it to the midfielder and then he hits it into the full forward line. Like, there's about three or four passes sometimes too many. And that's the most frustrating thing about Cork hurling at the moment for me, where they could go with a direct run of maybe three passes to a full forward line. So it's, but I think it'll be a very, very interesting game. As Cohen said, you can't beat championship fitness, but then Cork are just going to go into this game a little bit fresher, and it'll be a funny one. But I'd be hoping that Clare can continue their run.
Yeah, they could put Paddy Fitzpatrick on Darragh Fitzgibbon and then put either Cathal Malone or Colm Galvin to wing forward or something like that. Like, I mean, that might... I think Darragh Fitzgibbon needs to be man-marked. I think that's a mistake a lot of teams make, because the midfielders generally don't really mark each other. That would get David McInerney onto the field. Maybe I'm just throwing that out there. Who do you think will win this one?
Clare.
You think Clare?
I think Clare. I think the number of games that they've had, they're, as you said, they're battle-hardened, and they get a lot of confidence from the last number of games. And I think Tony Kelly not playing particularly well yesterday, he's going to be due a big win, as you could say for Patrick Horgan the other side. But I just think Clare have a little bit much. And look, I just think probably Cork haven't had enough championship games. That's going against them really at the end of the day, and Clare have. So I'll just tip Clare.
What about you, Damien?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Clare, but I do expect Cork to be extremely motivated, really up for this game. But no, I'm going to go with Clare.
Yeah, okay, I'll go for Cork in that one, lads, just to mix it up and keep it interesting. The other big one of the weekend, lads, is Laois and Westmeath. It's in the relegation match. So, like, I mean, you know, it's good for both counties, obviously, to get this one played. I think it was supposed to be before an All-Ireland semi-final. Would have messed up club hurling in both counties. At least they're done this weekend, whatever happens. It's hard to know what happens here, Conal, because, like, I mean, you know, Laois have had a more attacking style against Antrim and performed really well with that attacking style against Waterford. Westmeath are coming off a Joe McDonagh Cup win. You saw what the boost that gave Laois that year, you know, against G. I'm hoping Westmeath are drinking for the week. You know, they probably won't, knowing modern players. So, like, I mean, you don't know, are Laois... They're both hurled at the Division 1 level. That's why it's a Division 1 relegation match. You know, Westmeath have dangerous forwards. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, look, a very, very, very close game to call. I think Westmeath are probably really need this win. I think, obviously, look, Laois are obviously needed as well. But I think for Westmeath to really progress and take that next step and they have some seriously quality players. They're just not getting the recognition that they would. Like, Laois are getting a little bit of recognition because they had a couple of good up and down performances in the league this year. But Division 1 hurling, where it's all about, you need to be there. Whether you're playing Lillian McCarthy later on, you need to be competing in the Division 1 league against the top teams to really progress and bring on players and to keep at that level. And look, I really think that they nearly should both be in it, like, to try and make hurling better rather than putting one down. They'll probably dominate down there against Kerry. or whatever.
They're both in the Leinster Championship, thankfully, next year anyways. Yeah.
No, that's a positive. That is a positive. But I think for hurling itself, you need to be giving these teams not a help or a chance. Just let them compete with the other teams, you know. Dublin were at a stage where we needed to compete with these kind of teams. We have to get up that ladder. You're not going to get better competing against teams your own standard all the time or a bit less. So that's vital. That's not going to change now, obviously. But going back to the game, who do I think is going to win? Look, I probably would. You'd have to say Leash have turned their season early around in the last couple of weeks in their performances. And I know I heard that the players approached Cheddar and wanted to change the kind of the style that they did after the defeat that they got against Wexford, and it seems to be working for them. They have serious quality players to be able to do that. And I don't know why it took so long for them to try and persuade the management to move from being so defensive to attacking when they have the players, because as I said a couple of years ago when they played us, they were super up front and we just couldn't contain them. And once they get a run on you, it was very hard to stop that. But who do I think is going to win? I'd have to probably tip Leash a little bit, just on the basis of the fact that the last couple of weeks they seem to have just changed things around and they seem to be coming on a good bit of form at the minute. And look, I'll tip Leash, but I just I'd like both of them to be involved next year, really, but ultimately it's not going to happen.
Leash have home advantage, obviously. The Leash bench the last day was Kieran Comerford, who came on and scored a goal. He came on for Willie Dunphy in the first half. James Ryan came on, Aaron Dunphy came on, John Lennon came on, Matthew Whelan came on. Now that Leash are getting their players back, see that? Like, John Lennon was the best, a brilliant sweeper for Leash that day against Dublin. Yeah. Play outstanding in that role. That's a very strong bench. Do you know, Westmeath, I think Westmeath have a good team. You know, they've brilliant forwards, Davy Glennon and Killian Doyle and Niall Mitchell, who was so good the last day, and Tommy Doyle at centre-back, and they have Greville in midfield and Angus Clark wing-back. They have a good team. I think Leash probably have as good a team, but they'll probably be able to bring a bit more off the bench, Damien.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Leash bench should be a bit stronger than the Westmeath. I'd be hoping the Westmeath celebrated their Joe McDonagh Cup salute because they deserve it. And I hope they celebrate, because that's what it's all about, winning silverware and winning medals, and hopefully they enjoy their win. I think if Leash play on the positivity of the way they did against Waterford, I think they should be stronger, I think they should be better, and I'm going to go for a Leash win on this one. I think they should be strong enough to win this game.
Yeah, I'll go for a Leash win as well. Right, lads, we may leave it there. We've gone way over time. We'll be back on Monday. We'll review all these matches. We'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else, Keith.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.